It's officially DC festival season, and we're super excited about this one coming up on May 18th. Africa on the Avenue is a celebration of the vibrant African immigrant community along Georgia Avenue Northwest. There's going to be interactive art installations, fashion shows, music, food, and local business stands. This one-day festival, organized by District Bridges' Lower Georgia Avenue Main Street program, truly has something for everyone. So I'll see you there on May 18th. Go to districtbridges.org to learn more.
Today on CityCast DC, so what makes a person write an entire book on one city's alleys? In DC, it might be the fact that their history is a weird, crazy metaphor for a couple centuries of race and class and power right here in our hometown. Stick around to understand how the history of Washington is all about the streets behind the streets. Hey, before we start today, we've got Nats tickets for you. If you want a chance to win two FIS Champions Club tickets to any game of your choice, head to membership.citycast.fm and become a member by Friday. Again, that's membership.citycast.fm. Thank you. Today is Thursday, April 18th. I'm Michael Schaefer, and here's what DC is talking about. Kim Prothero-Williams, you have written a whole book about DC's alleys, and I'm a nerd for this stuff, so I know this is like a big part of the district's history, but tell me, how did you get into studying alleys of all things?
Well, I am an architectural historian in DC, and I work for the DC Historic Preservation Office, and so we review alterations and additions to historic buildings, but we didn't know anything about our alley buildings, and so we have quite a number of historic districts in DC that include alleys, and there was a lot of pressure on our alley buildings.
When you say there was a lot of pressure on them, meaning city's growing, people are buying properties, they're thinking maybe I want to knock down that thing in my back alley or I want to transform it in some way. There's historic preservation rules and they need to come to you as a historic preservation office. And nobody knew anything.
Correct. And the pressure was really not coming so much from homeowners because their alterations would generally be minor and something we could handle readily. It was really more pressure from developers who were looking to expand buildings from the rear of the buildings that faced the public streets, which would have involved demolition of the alley buildings. And so since we really didn't know how to evaluate them because we didn't know how many alley buildings we had of what particular type, whether they were really rare or common, I just decided to do an alley building survey. And so I went out with a team of volunteers, interns, and students, and we walked all the alleys of the original city in DC. We took photographs on site and researched them to understand when they were built, what their original use was. And then I put them in a database and just sort of started analyzing them. And that actually took quite a while, believe it or not.
How long did it take?
So it took 3 years, but it was sort of a side project to my everyday work. But anyway, then at the end of the day, we had this database of knowledge about our alley buildings so that we could better understand them and better review them for alterations and additions and also for demolition because there was a lot of pressure.
Let me back up a sec to what people might not know, which is what makes DC's alleys. I mean, there's a lot of alleys in the country. What makes DC's alleys different, special, and historically significant from your point of view?
So they are completely unique to American cities. Almost or all American cities have alleys that cut through their blocks from one end to the other. They're singular routes through a block. And in DC, our alleys are centered at the center of our blocks, which we call squares. And generally, they come in an H shape or an I shape, and they're totally concealed from the public street. So you cannot see into the alley from the public right of way. You access the alleys by these narrower alleys that do come to the public street, but they're really narrow, like 10 feet, 12 feet, or 15 feet wide in some instances. And those are just the access alleys that then enter into this larger alley network. And the alleys themselves are 30 feet wide at the center. So they're quite wide and they occupy, a pretty big percentage of the center of the square. So they're different in that respect. And then in another respect, they're different because it's like alleys of other cities, you can cut through from one block to the next just following the alleys because they just cross the blocks in a linear fashion. In DC, access alleys are not always open at the same point on the block. So you can go from one block to the next, but you can't cross over the street and enter the alley to the next block from the same entry point. You have to find that entry point elsewhere. It might be on a perpendicular street.
And as a result of this, these alleys, I mean, people lived there. These were not just a place for to put your trash cans and so on. There was a whole sort of life that developed.
Exactly. Yeah. And that was not actually intentional when it was planned in the late century, 1791. It was assumed that the houses would occupy the center of these large lots that reached all the way from the public street back to the alleyway, and that those alleys would be there to service the back lots of those property owners. So you could bring your horse in there with carts and goods, and the backs of those lots would have domestic outbuildings and maybe formal gardens or vegetable gardens or whatever. It was not anticipated that they would become inhabited. That really came about in the years before the Civil War, but mostly during and after the Civil War, when we had a huge influx in population, mostly people who were escaping enslavement or who were recently emancipated, came to DC and they were looking for affordable housing. And either they themselves or property owners built quick and very dirty housing at the backs of their lots. And this then developed into a more deliberate process of subdividing our lots at the rear so that they had alley-only lots. So lots that only fronted on the alley. They had no access to the public streets. So that is what is so unusual and unique about our alleys, is that we have alley lots that housed a good percentage of the population at its height in the late 19th century.
We're talking again about sort of the central original part of Washington. Where I live in Ward 3, there's alleys, but these are more traditional American alleys, like Blagden Alley, right? Which
yes.
Now has been kind of turned into like a fancy or, you know, faux gritty place where people can go out and eat and dress up and so on. But but what you're talking about is that this was once the form of housing that some of the poorest and most vulnerable people lived in.
Yep, absolutely. You mentioned Blagden Alley. It wasn't entirely residential. So there were alley dwellings in Blagden Alley. In fact, I think there are at least 54 households, if not more, who lived in Blagden Alley. But there were also commercial livery stables there. So these alleys were teeming with activity that was unsavory commercial kind of development in the alleys, you know, next to these residences that were occupied by, as you say, the poor segment of society and mostly Black. In 1897, when there was a police survey done, it was identified as being 93% African-American. So there were some alleys where there were whites, there were some integrated alleys, but for the most part, alleys themselves were also segregated.
It led to this weird pattern, I think, where if you looked at something on sort of a block level or a square mile level, the city looked remarkably integrated because the front streets would be white people with money, and then the alleys were not. So folks were living cheek by jowl, but in very different conditions.
Yeah, and that's a very good point. If you like look at the census records, it seems like it's a very integrated city. But in fact, yeah, there was segregation. It was clustered. But the alleys were also really hidden from the front houses by other back buildings and fences. And so the people who lived in the houses that faced the front really didn't even see the alleys from the rear windows of their house, because they would put up like two-story stables at the back of their lots, or they would put up fences or sheds. You know, we found in the survey these really rare surviving two-story brick sheds that, you know, are phenomenal survivors, actually. But they were deliberately created not only for the purpose they served, but also to further cut off the alley communities from the communities facing the public streets. So they were totally independent, cohesive, separate communities, even though, yeah, if you were to look at the census records, it would seem integrated because blacks and whites were living in the same streets and squares.
Everybody knows that getting that perfect Mother's Day gift is basically impossible, but we promise Mom will love this one. The Capitol Hill Restoration Society House and Garden Tour is back this Mother's Day weekend on May 11th and May 12th. Tour 9 elaborate homes and gardens and 3 historic buildings on Capitol Hill that you can't normally enter. And if you can't make it, check out the Capitol Hill Restoration Society's other events like walking tours and monthly preservation cafes. You can buy tickets for the Mother's Day House and Garden Tour on Eventbrite, and be sure to follow CHRS on Facebook and Instagram at Capitol Hill Restoration DC.
So can you walk us from there to here? Because this became, I mean, we're talking about residences that often was sort of shacks without plumbing. And it became a subject of reform. And, you know, this is unconscionable that we have people living in these conditions. How did we get from this situation of like ramshackle dwellings to one where alleys might have like trendy restaurants in them? What's the path from there to here?
Well, yeah, that's kind of a long path with different episodic changes here and there. But really and truly, alley dwellings, even though there were some still occupied by the poor segment of society into the mid-20th century, by and large, they had been eliminated, both by public policy, government policy that was intended to eradicate the alleys and alley dwellings, but also by natural causes, like, you know, once the automobile was introduced and streetcar was introduced before that, the city grew and expanded in such a way that there was greater housing available. So people weren't stuck in the center city. And so they were able to go further afield for more affordable housing. So already beginning in the, you know, early 20th century, the alleys were starting to see new uses. I mean, artists were already beginning to move into the alleys, you know, to have affordable place for their studios. And so they were moving into former stables or even some of the former dwellings and creating these studio spaces and artist communities themselves.
Wait, so like the gentrification of alleys is 100 years old.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really consider it gentrification necessarily, but in a way it was. And interestingly, too, those artists, all of whom that I know about were white. And of course, they were not then the focus of the efforts to eradicate inhabited alleys. So, you know, all of these efforts were focused on the Black residents of the alleys, like eliminating the poor alley dwellings. And yet there were these white artists moving in, and somehow they were immune to these efforts to eradicate the occupation of the alleys.
And those eradication efforts, that was like people in Manhattan, you know, about organizing about tenements. We don't want people living in this circumstance.
I mean, essentially, DC's alleys were the same as New York's tenements. I mean, it was the same phenomenon where, you know, these were considered the slums and the ghettos. And as I said, it housed at a certain point almost 10% of the population. And the conditions of both, obviously, the alley dwellings themselves were pretty abhorrent. They were all often overcrowded, but they had no services. So there's no water, and no sewage system, and no heat. And then the other thing is there was terrible health concern because there were no services provided. And so there was trash buildup, rodents running rampant. There were health codes, but they were never enforced. And so the owners of the alley dwellings generally, obviously, were our slum lords of the time. They lived well beyond the alleys. They never visited the properties that they owned. And of course, the tenants, like we know, in most cases, were afraid to complain because they would just see their rents increase. And so they just remained quiet as these houses and the alleyways themselves just deteriorated around them.
This is such a great like metaphor for Washington's history or America's history, that you had a situation where the more powerful part of the population are often living within like 100 yards of people who didn't have plumbing, who were rodent infested, who didn't get garbage collected, and were either completely unaware of this because they had literally built things to shield themselves from having to see it, or just didn't care.
Yeah, it's true. But it was also being in the shadow of the Capitol that really did finally cause Congress to enact the 1934 Alley Dwelling Act, which established the Alley Dwelling Authority that was given 10 years in which to eliminate all alley dwellings in D.C. The humanitarians who were concerned about health conditions, but probably more importantly, the public health of those around the alley dwellers they were more concerned about. But they really lobbied Congress, and they used that dichotomy that you're talking about, showing the alley slums with the monumental capital behind them that pushed these humanitarians to get political action. And they were successful, although the Alley Dwelling Act was eventually abandoned in the 1950s after professional whites had discovered the alleys and moved in and rehabilitated them.
Yeah, a lot of times those humanitarian efforts to eradicate the conditions of poverty also mean removing the actual poor people.
Yeah.
One of the cool things in your book, and I really recommend it, is by the 20s, when the streetcars had been invented, cars had been invented, poor people were able to move further afield. And these alleys are being, as you say, new uses are being found. This, of course, coincides with Prohibition. And you have this chapter called Washington's Bohemia. Tell me about the Crazy Cat Club.
So the Crazy Cat Club was definitely the most fun of all of those, bohemian activities in the alleyways at that time. But it was founded by this guy named Cleon Throckmorton. Gotta love that name.
Great name.
Yeah, he was a native Washingtonian, actually was a high school student at our McKinley High School, and an artist and quite accomplished, but he felt that there really wasn't a community for up-and-coming artists. I mean, Washington, as you know, is a very conservative city, and there were some arts venues, but they really only catered to a certain clientele. And so he opened the Crazy Cat Club. He had a girlfriend named Kat Mullins, who was a sketch artist. She actually did a great sketch of the alley where the Crazy Cat Club is. And I'm pretty sure that's why it's called the Crazy Cat Club, although I didn't find any verification or archival evidence of that, but pretty sure it was named after his girlfriend, Kat Mullins. In that alley, they had a former stable where they had musical performances, they had dramatic performances, but they also occupied the alley itself, and they created this little court. There was a tree growing, and there was quite a mature tree that had a treehouse in it, and they had a table up there, and they had food and beverages. And to get to the treehouse, there was this ladder that the waiter had to climb and carry his tray up to the people seated in the treehouse. So it was quite the place to be seen and to see people if you were a member of that artistic community.
Kind of answered the question I was going to ask, which is, given that it's Prohibition and that this is sort of where the Bohemians are hanging out, 30 years prior to this, the authorities clearly didn't care about what was happening in the alleys. Did that situation of like, hey, the rules are going to be a little bit looser for whatever goes on in the back alleys, did that also apply in Prohibition?
Yeah, I don't really know the answer to that. I can definitely say, though, that the police generally were afraid to enter the alleys. They were threatened by the inhabited alleys where, back in the 19th century anyway, this segment of population lived, because obviously they were protecting themselves back there too. And so the police were not really welcome. But in this case, I found a number of police reports in the newspapers that they had gone into the alley where the Crazy Cat Club was. So clearly they weren't afraid to go in there to bust up what they considered to be, criminal activity during Prohibition, which was raucous behavior, loud, and alcohol beverage use.
It occurs to me we're at a moment that has some parallels with the early alley years, which is, right now, the Washington, D.C. is famously, it's a tough place to afford to live. And we are trying to figure out, all these people want to live here, where on earth should they live? Has there been a sort of pressure to create new housing on the alleys, having more people living there?
There have been efforts. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think they're going to be affordable efforts. So because it's expensive to build in the alleys, because as I said, the infrastructure isn't always there. And yes, there were those group of, white professionals who in the late 1940s and 50s brought plumbing in, but that was only brought into certain alleys. So some alleys in Georgetown, alleys in Foggy Bottom and Capitol Hill, that happened. But for the most part, there isn't necessarily plumbing in place in some of these alleys. And so it has to be brought in. So building an alley dwelling is an expensive proposition.
Although at a certain point, I guess you just want to build volume too.
Yeah. So I do think there is a possibility there where through greater numbers of alley dwellings in a single alley, it could potentially be a little more affordable and less expensive. But I don't think it's going to solve our question of our problem of affordability in DC yeah. housing at all. But I think, you know, more than that, it does offer some of the property owners some options. So, you know, a lot of people are wanting to age in place, but these old Victorian houses may be, you know, getting too big for them, but they want to stay in the city. And so, you know, they can maybe build an alley dwelling unit or an accessory dwelling unit or an alley house. And there's a differentiation between the two there. So there, it enables people to have a choice of, you know, staying in the city and downsizing, I think is probably more appropriate. But yeah, it's not, we would never be able to create the number of units we need to sort of even solve or begin to address our affordable housing crisis, basically.
You and your team have walked every alley in the original city. If someone wanted to go on a walking tour of the most interesting ones, where would you send them?
Yeah, a lot of people ask me that. And it's really hard because there's so many great alleys, but they're very distant from one another. So what I would say is for the biggest bang for your buck, I would go to Capitol Hill because there's the greatest concentration of intact alleys there. So you can really go from one square to the next and really see some great alley buildings from complete rows of alley dwellings to some really great stables to, you know, some other commercial type buildings. There's like a carriage manufacturing plant, a former carriage manufacturing plant on Capitol Hill. So the blocks between 4th and 5th and 6th Street Southeast up to 4th, 5th and 6th Street Northeast between C and probably Constitution Avenue or even further up. That's a really good segment of Capitol Hill where you can walk from alley to alley.
Kim, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being here. This was really fun.
Sure. Thanks, Michael.
And that's all for today here on CityCast DC. If you enjoyed the show, go yell about it in your alley. You can also rate the show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our morning newsletter. We'll be back tomorrow morning with more news from around the city. Bye.